Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining our webinar. This is part one of LawLine's Expert on Call webinar series, and will center around key thinking strategies, how to grow as a leader in your law firm. Our panelists today are David Schnurman, CEO of LawLine, and Kim Addis, president and founder of Frame of Mind Coaching. The style of this webinar will be interactive, so please take a moment to find the Q&A function on your Zoom panel and ask questions throughout the webinar. We'd like you to consider this to be a roundtable discussion where you feel encouraged to ask questions about your frustrations, pain points, stressors, and tensions surrounding your professional growth, and allow David and Kim to address some solutions. David, would you like to take it away?
Thanks, Kathleen. So I just wanted to take a quick moment to thank everybody for joining us and to tell you about 30 seconds about my background and why we're doing this. So I am the CEO of LawLine. I've been doing this since 2006. I started LawLine in law school, and we grew it from essentially one person to now we have about 30 full-time people. And we have 1,500 hours of courses on the site. And over the years of growing that company and working with 30 people, that the biggest challenge for me has been leadership and managing myself as well as the way to help other people become leaders in the company. And as I've talked to lawyers and many other entrepreneurs, it's the number one challenge most people face. I'm also the president-elect of Entrepreneurs Organization in New York. We have 200 members. And so again, it's leading other leaders because it's all entrepreneurs. And then my relationship with Kim Addis, I sought Kim out just over 5 years ago to work with me on a regular basis to help me improve my leadership. And the things that I got from Kim and working with her not only changed how I am in my company, but she actually helped me change my life. So we've been talking about this for a really long time. And so this is hopefully the first of many, and we'll get feedback. And so that's sort of the context. Kim, if you could just take a quick 30 seconds, that was like a 2 minute 30 seconds, but just introduce yourself to give a little bit of context to sort of who you are.
Well, hello. I'm first of all delighted to be here. And yes, it's been a long time in coming. So David, thank you for doing this with me and with all the lawyers that are on the line. So I run a coaching company. I've been doing this for 13 years. I have a team of coaches, and I work with primarily the highly driven population, people who are considered leaders in their field, whether they are entrepreneurs, CEOs, lawyers, doctors, whatever it is, those are the people I work with. And what I really do is I look at how they think and how their thinking impacts their outcomes professionally and personally. So that's just a very brief intro.
Great. And so Kim and I, when we first wanted to do this, we said, what we're not going to do is a 45-minute PowerPoint presentation and then 15 minutes of Q&A afterwards, because that's not what we would want. We would want just something more of a conversation. And then, and again, we already have some questions from people, but we want, as you're hearing stuff, to type some things in Q&A, because to me, this is, if you hear something that you need and you're trying to figure out. So I just want to get right to the bullets. You know, I like to get right to the meat of things, Kim. And then we can kind of jump back and jump around to sort of, you know, what we're doing here. But I want to make sure people get value right away. And so you had like five or six bullets in the description. So I want to start with bullet number one. You said in this seminar, you're going to share the single most important factor that leads to success. So that's a big promise. So
yeah.
Give the value. Let's do it.
Okay, so let's talk about leadership for a minute. What is a leader? A leader is a person who goes first, right? So what does it mean to go first? It means seeing a vision and sharing that vision with others and enrolling people into that vision. However, some things interfere with people's ability to make that happen. And typically, that involves themselves. And so what is the greatest really differentiator between incredible leaders and other people who want to be leaders? Number one, it's their ability to manage themselves. And number two, it's their ability to connect their vision with the mission and personal values and personal goals of the people they are leading. And so what it boils down to is that extraordinary leaders think a little bit differently than the rest of the world and are always looking at themselves and managing themselves as well as connecting their followers to the overall mission of the organization.
But let's make that a little bit more sort of down to earth or practical. So I'm okay. I'm an attorney. So one of the questions, let me just do it. One of the questions that came in originally was, she said, I want to grow as a leader in my law firm. And the only thing that she sees is the title senior associate. So she's not sure what that means, but let's just say somebody wants to grow as a leader in a law firm. She wants to become a senior associate, but then maybe a partner. Now let's use this question. What's the single most important thing that she can do to grow as a leader in her firm, going back to like taking what you just said, translating to practicality?
Yeah. Okay. So the question is interesting because the question starts off with what can she do in order to be more effective? And I want to focus on the word do. A lot of people think that in order to reach their goals, they need to take action. And I'm not saying that action isn't important. It is important, but action follows thought. And so very often people jump into action without stopping to think about their thinking. And what do I mean by that? Very often our thinking really contradicts the goals we want to achieve. And so for me, as I answer that question, I would want to ask her some questions. And question number one is, do you think it's possible for you to reach that goal? If so, why? If not, why not? And so I really want to understand what she believes to be true about her ability to increased her position in an organization and what she thinks is happening around her, because her beliefs will ultimately dictate what her actions are. And if her beliefs aren't lined up with her ability to get that goal, she won't get it, right? So it's really about, you know, part A is, how are you thinking about anything you're doing? How are you thinking about growing your revenues? How are you thinking about getting to the next position in your career? How are you thinking about your job as a leader and as a lawyer? How are you thinking? And so before she does anything, the first thing I want to do is ask one question. What do you believe to be true about this position?
Okay, so let's talk about a law firm. Let's say you're a mid-sized firm and you're a senior associate or you're a partner, and you manage people or you lead people, and you're trying to grow as on your own. So let's talk about thinking. Like, what does that mean? Like, okay, because one of the things you said to me is there's three thinking strategies that we can share. But like, I like actionable things, right? And I know that we fight against that. But I want somebody to say, okay, what do I do with what Kim just said about thinking? And again, I know we only have an hour, but like, what does that actually mean for somebody listening right now to do?
Okay, so again, you're always reaching towards the doing, right? And so one of the things I really want to make clear is thought precedes action. So before you think, what can I do? The first thing you do is ask yourself, what am I thinking? Okay, so if you call that an action, fine. So one of the things that I want to do is share how I coach people. The reason I want to do that is because there's a critical element to how I coach, is that I ask my clients to journal every single day in an online journal. And every time they journal, their journal comes to me or one of my coaches who reads and replies to the journal. So I want to introduce journaling. So what can you do when you're trying to achieve a goal and you feel stuck or you feel frustrated or it feels like an elusive goal? One thing that I would like to introduce is the idea of journaling your thoughts. Take a piece of paper and a pen or go on some online program and ask yourself some questions. Number one, what do I believe to be true about my ability to get this, to reach this goal or get this new position? What do I believe to be true? What do I believe about my skills and abilities? What do I believe about my position in the organization? What do I believe to be true about the organization itself? About my profile, et cetera. So you want to write that down, because in there, in your thinking, is really a download of a set of beliefs that will either help you gain that position or goal or really interfere with your ability to achieve that. And so the first thing we want to do is see how you're thinking.
So it's really interesting, and I'm going to dive a little bit deeper into this. So number one, in terms of journaling, I don't know, you know, I don't think we've set this up, but for next time, I would love to start doing polls because I'd be interested to see how many people actually journal. We're 9 minutes in, I'm going to keep begging for people to give a question. You know, it takes that first brave person to get more people in there, because you joined this for a reason, whoever's listening right now, and we're giving you the opportunity to, like, you know, to disagree or ask a question. So definitely take it.
You're asking lawyers to disagree.
Yeah. I want to dive into the journaling component was really transformative for me. And one of the things for me is I always felt for my leadership challenge, it was on the outside. Like I always felt like it was about how to deal with the tough conversations, how to deal with managing people. And what you're saying is what you need to do is first focus on how you think before you focus on the outside.
Well, look at, you know, you said tough conversations. So many people say, I have a communication problem. You know, I have to have a tough conversation. What makes a tough conversation? The way you think about it, right? We all have communication skills. We all speak basically the same language. We don't have a communication issue. We have thinking issues. And when we believe a conversation is tough, guess what? It becomes harder. It becomes stressful. It becomes something that we don't look forward to instead of just the conversation. And so the way we think about everything will determine how we experience everything.
Great. So the first assignment that you gave was a journaling assignment. Can you just repeat that right now? What you want to do?
Yeah, I want you to write down the question, what do I believe to be true about my ability to reach, write down the goal, whatever that goal is. What do I believe to be true? And that includes what do I believe to be true about my ability to reach that goal? What do I believe to be true about the environment or the circumstances around which that goal is attainable or not?
And then what do you do after that?
Well, then you look at it. You see, one of the things, and you know, you're asking me about the thinking strategies of really successful leaders. One of the biggest strategies that they use is they challenge their thinking, they challenge their beliefs. And so once you have those beliefs down, and again, I'm talking to lawyers who are used to challenging, what I want you to do is ask yourself, are these beliefs even true? Do they make any sense? Are they factual? Or am I making them up? And what you will find is most of our beliefs are invented. They're not true. And those beliefs interfere with our ability to reach our goals.
Good. I'm going to pause here because we got two questions coming in. Let's see how this works out. So the first question is, and I think you can see them too if you click the Q&A, but I'll read it out loud, is, do I need permission, and in parentheses, of other leaders in the firm to be a leader?
That's such a great question. The answer is no, of course not. You don't need permission because leadership boils down to two things. Number one is self-management. And number two is really the ability to coach others. Do you need permission to do either of those? Absolutely not.
So I want to dive into that because I don't understand the question actually. And you said it's a really good question. So what do you think Hamid is asking about permission? Like, so because one of the things we say in my company is lead by example. Right. And like, if I know from being a CEO is I just want people to take action and do things because if I have to do it all myself, it's tough. So what do you think, what does that mean to you when he asked, do I need permission?
Well, let's go back. You said, I want people to take action, but as a leader, you need to, you know, deliver a message that says, I encourage you to take action. Right? I encourage you to think for yourself and I encourage you to take action. I think what he's asking, and Hamid, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're saying, does someone need to bless me with the honor of the leadership position or the title in order for me to be able to truly be a leader?
Right.
And the answer is no.
Yeah. So I would actually agree with that 100% because actually in my experience, it's sort of like the chicken or the egg. It's like, that's how you become a leader by not asking, by kind of acting like a leader from the beginning. Is there something that Hamid can do, again, an action that can help him? What's his next step?
So the thing is, what you want to do is you want to start to observe your reactions to everything, right? Like you want to start to observe, how do you respond when you get criticism? How do you respond when a client isn't happy? How do you respond when there's an opportunity and you're not sure if you should take it? Like you want to start to monitor really your emotional state, but also your actions and see if your emotional state opens doors or shuts them down. So that's thing number one, because if every time there's a challenge or a conflict, you shut down or you get mad or you blow up, all those actions won't lead you to where you want to go. And really, you're behaving that way because your mind is processing these events in a way that really is contradictory to your ability to reach those goals. So the first step is start to monitor the way you feel, the way you react, the way you respond to all interactions, to all challenges, to all adverse situations. So that's step one.
Got it. The next question I don't really think is necessarily relevant to this conversation, unless I'm missing something. It was, how do you create a climate for older people to retire and to recruit younger lawyers to continue at the firm? So I'm not sure. Maybe
I think that's a very important question, because you're really asking, how do we take our older lawyers and really put them in a coaching position so that they are comfortable leaving a legacy and making room for the next person? And that also has to do with their thinking, because if they feel that that's a threat, they're not going to want to do that. But if they feel it's an opportunity and an honor, and they're leaving a great legacy, that's a whole different positioning, isn't it? So it's really around how we position that particular job, which is coaching, mentoring, bringing in the younger lawyers and making space for them, and even positioning that as a partnership opportunity between that senior lawyer and the younger one. Right? Yeah. That's a whole different way of looking at it. And really, they'll, again, close up or clench up or feel threatened if they feel like they're being thrown out or, you know, elbowed over to moving over. But if they feel that it's an honorable position, then they'll take it with pleasure.
Great. So thank you for those two questions. I'm sure more will come in. I'm going to keep reemphasizing some of the things that we said, because there's a lot of information you can cover, obviously, in 60 minutes, and we're going to get to more. But I just want to make sure, like, we keep saying the same things over, at least somebody will sort of get that takeaway. And so again, because I'm doing this with you right now, and I still don't have a clear sense, maybe because I'm asking, but remind me again, what is the single most, now that we know a little bit more context, what's the single most important factor that leads to success?
Okay, so I'm going to put it in a different word so that it helps you understand. The single most important factor that leads to success is emotional resilience. Emotional intelligence plays a role too, but we're talking about emotional resilience. What is emotional resilience? It's the ability to bounce back from adversity with speed and agility. And not only bounce back from adversity, but turn that adversity into a strategic advantage.
Great. So emotional resilience. I like that. And I think that makes a ton of sense because you're not too high, you're not too low. Now let's go once again to what are the strategies, the thinking strategies to create emotional resilience to help you become a better leader?
Okay. So I'm going to give you three thinking strategies, or let's call them the top three thinking strategies that very successful leaders take on. Number one is that they challenge their thinking. They challenge their beliefs. They ask themselves, what am I thinking about this situation that's causing me stress, anxiety, frustration? How am I seeing this? They literally write it down, and then they challenge every one of their ideas. So that's thing number one. And it's really, I would call that the foundation of extraordinary leaders, is that they challenge their basic premise on everything. And that's what lawyers do when they work on cases, right? They challenge premises. But what we're trying to do is help leaders challenge their own thinking. So that's thing number one. Thing number two is they leverage their resources. So they ask themselves, what resources would I like to have, even if I believe that they are not at my disposal? What resources would I like to access? And they have no fear about looking beyond the corners of their circumstances to look for resources that may not be immediately accessible. So what resources are available to me? And number three is that they focus, like really focus on what they want without getting distracted. So they're very singularly minded on their goal.
So I like Ryan, because Ryan had the question that I was about to ask you. Ryan just asked, what does it mean to challenge your belief? Can you give a specific example in the context, you know, I'll add one more thing, maybe in the context of a law firm.
Okay. So what was the first question that somebody asked? Something about...
do I need permission?
No. The one before.
To grow as a leader, not sure, but the only title that's there is senior associate, and not sure what that actually even means to be a senior associate.
Okay. So if I were to write down all my beliefs about being a senior associate, some of my beliefs might look like, you know, there's no more room for any more senior associates, or the people in charge would never let me be a senior associate, or I don't have enough experience to be a senior associate, or I don't even know what it means to be a senior associate. So I'm writing down all my beliefs around being a senior associate. Okay, so that's number one. Number two is, now I'm challenging them. Is it true that you don't have enough experience? Is it true that the people on board would never let you be a senior associate? Now we're challenging your fundamental beliefs. And let me kind of also state that a lot of times we are not aware of our beliefs. They're hidden underneath the surface until we sit down and say, what do I actually believe to be true? And we operate from a place of having beliefs that are deeply set into our system that often prevents us from taking action that leads us to our goals. So if deep down inside you simply believe you don't have enough experience or seniority or even age, what are you going to do? Nothing. So that's why we need to challenge those beliefs. Ryan, did that answer your question?
Well, I want to jump on that a little bit, because I actually had a whole conversation with an attorney recently who has a partner. And the challenge is, the partner has been very successful in getting clients, but the partner, with all, they have a lot of associates, the partner does not treat people nice, and the culture has been hurting. And I said, well, what are you going to do about it? She's like, oh, no, that's what you need to do to be a good leader. And I remember thinking, no, it's not. Like, and I remember I've had this conversation with you, Kim, and I always said, I used to think that in order to be a leader and grow and be successful, you actually have to be, we use like a PG word, which is like mean or to people. And it was more about how to hold people accountable,
right?
To do that. So go ahead.
So if you're spending all your time as the leader holding people accountable, you are really pinned down, and you're not in a position to leverage your greatest skills, whatever that is, right? And most leaders, you know, I would say to them, to you, that most leaders are visionaries. They're explorers. They're people who chart courses. They're not people who manage details. Would you agree with that?
At least me, for sure.
At least a lot of leaders that I have ever worked with. And so if you give the leader the job of holding people accountable to anything, the person who's being held accountable is trapped, and so is the leader. And so that is not the job of the leader.
Great.
So the job of the leader is to encourage and to build a team of people who hold themselves accountable. That's very, very important. So let's talk about being mean and not being mean. As a leader, my job is to hold a vision for my team members, for my employees, that is bigger than their own vision of themselves, and hold them up to that vision, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
So what happens when people aren't performing? There's something at play there. There's something in their thinking that's preventing them from performing. And my job as a leader is to get to that something and move it out of the way.
Got it.
Kim, I'd actually like to ask you a question about your second strategy as well. I'm glad that David asked and Ryan asked about the first. So your second strategy you mentioned as leveraging resources. And yep. I was wondering, are there any specific schools or programs or schools of thought that can be leveraged as resources for approaching this improvement in thinking style?
Well, again, you know, leveraging your resources has a lot to do with your thinking and your belief. So what do you believe is accessible to you, and what do you believe is not? And so really the practice is to create, you know, have you ever heard of just whiteboarding? And, you know, creating a blue sky. If anything were possible, I would love for this to happen, right? That's the approach. And so you could write, oh, I'd love these 10 amazing things to happen. And then in the next breath, you say, but they're impossible because I don't have enough money. I don't know enough people. I'm not old enough. All those reasons. And what you want to do is now start to again, challenge your beliefs around the resources that you have accessible to you. And so these people say anything's accessible to me. So it's not about a school of thought. It's about really starting to allow your mind to tap into this big, huge, wide world of options and looking at what's available to you in your ideal scenario.
So it's like the glass is half full versus the glass is half empty situation.
No, the glass just has water in it. And I can refill it whenever I want.
Okay. I like that. So I thank you, Kathleen, because I like, again, I want to make sure that we dive a little bit deeper to each thing. So we gave an example for challenging idea. We talked a little bit more about what the fact that there's just water in the glass and don't worry about if it's half full or not. And just utilize that, I think, is what you're saying.
What I'm saying is how you think about the water will determine, like if you think, oh my God, I only have half a glass of water and I don't want to waste it, right? Like you're thinking in a very, in a scarcity mindset, right?
All
right.
Like let's try to put that into a law firm scenario. So can you think of any, to put you on the spot, something with that, a resource for a law, like, I don't know, maybe you don't have an administrative assistant to help you with something and you're thinking you can't get it done in time. Is that
right? Or, you know, one of the greatest stressors of lawyers is time, right? Billable time, managing sales with managing delivery, family and home balance, all that kind of thing, right? So time is a big issue. And when you talk to lawyers, they say, well, I have no time. And you say, well, why don't you get some help? Well, I don't even have time to get help, right? How many times have we heard that one before? And so what I want to say about that is that the way you think about every subject will determine the outcomes. So whether you think about your resources, whether you think about a difficult or challenging situation, however you think about everything will determine the results you get. And really that's my primary message, is it's not about making an action list. It's really about stopping for a moment to think about your approach, to think about your strategy, to think about your beliefs.
So if anybody hasn't heard, her Canadian accent just kind of popped up on that one with the about. She's in Montreal. I'm in Toronto. I'm sorry. So sorry about that, but that, I just have to give a plug to Toronto. So I think that was a good segue to your number three, because it's what you think, what you, essentially the title of your book, and number three is what you focus on grows. And right. So number one, again, just to repeat, you said the three key thinking strategies is one, challenge your ideas. Number
your
two,
beliefs.
Your beliefs. I'm sorry. And number two is leverage your resources, essentially. And the way to do that is, remind me again.
To literally blue sky your ideas and say, in my ideal world, what resource would I want to have appearing at my doorstep?
Great. So then you said that goes to number three, which is focus on what you want. So what does that mean compared to what you just said?
Well, look, people who run companies say, okay, so what I really want is to increase my revenues to, you know, by whatever, 20% or 30%. But what they do is they spend all their time doing other things. Right? Whatever those other things are. And they are not focused on their primary goal. And what we find is people who achieve really great results are people who are focused on their single most important goal. They're just focused and they get rid of all distraction. They're just completely and utterly focused. And if you look at how they spend their time on that goal with no distraction.
If anybody wants to be brave, can you share with us what's the most important goal that you have right now? Because I want to find a real life example. Like, so what I'm going to ask Kim is if there's something that you're trying to accomplish as a leader, and having gotten there, if we can kind of dive into that, and hear that real life example. And if we don't, we'll just move on. But I'll give you, we'll look back, in that regard. By the way, Frank Furbacher is trying to connect or chat. So that's cool, Frank. I want to go back.
I see he wrote something here.
I don't see what it says. Hold on.
Living life with purpose and looking long-term versus short-term.
Thank you, Frank. I like that.
Okay. So that is the goal. If that is the goal, the question is, where does living short-term interfere with living long-term? And what are your beliefs about what you need to do in the short term in order to live in the long term? And so again, we're coming back to the whole idea of how do you think about this? Because how you think about it will determine where you get distracted and where you spend your time and how that plays out in terms of the results you're getting.
Great. Thank you, Frank, for the chat feature, which I didn't know existed. And we have actually two goals that were submitted. One is, again, by Ryan. His goal was developing a book of business. So that's obviously probably every single person on here who is has their own firm or is in charge of that in as a partner. So what do we, what does Ryan do to focus on that?
So again, the doing.
And right? By the way, there's a second one, which is very similar. I just want to read it out. Increasing firm's number of domestic clients, challenges. We lack meaningful contacts that can generate the work. So two of the same goals, which again, makes sense because that's really important.
Okay. So if we say our greatest challenge or our greatest, the goal that we want to do have is developing a book of business, then the question is, I would ask you, so what do you think about that? That's the first place I would start. Is that hard? Is that difficult? What do you think needs to be done in order to make that happen? And what do you think about the likelihood of you doing it? So that's the first place I would start. Because if you say, well, I don't really have time. I don't really know how to do it. I'm not really a networker. I'm not a salesperson. I'm a lawyer. That's not what I signed up for. On and on and on. So the first place I need to start with is understanding how you think about this particular task. So it's about the thinking first. And then I would say, okay, well, let's look at what you're doing, right? What activities are you doing in order to achieve the goal of developing a book of business? And we might find that most of the activities have nothing to do with developing a book of business, or that the percentage of time on this activity is not aligned with the goal.
Right. And of course, you said time is the biggest challenge, and that I'm thinking if I'm an attorney hearing you say, look, I have to bill, you know, X amount of hours per month, and I to build business, and I have to a goal to hit business, and I want to grow as a leader. I can't do it all, and I'm not really sure where to go with that.
Okay, so that what you're really saying is I have a resource gap or I have a resource bottleneck, and again, there are lots of, you know, lawyers aren't different from any other service providing companies, and the way they think about themselves and their business will determine how things play out. So again, here's the big kind of struggle or friction that I see all the time is that lawyers, other service providing entrepreneurs have a certain view of the world that says, you know, here's my box and I have to live within it. And my job is to expand the box so that they can see things a little bit differently. So in that example, well, I have to do everything. There's no way that anything else can be done by anyone other than me. And we would challenge that idea.
So I think there's a question that it's hard to read while I was listening, but I think it kind of talks to what you're saying. Janice wrote, how do you get your firm to fully appreciate your leadership roles, office leader and board member, at the end, the time it takes to do them, so the firm, so it backs off from billable hours and origination requirements. They already appreciate it and think I'm doing a great job, but the billable hours and origination requirements are still there, albeit reduced.
Albeit,
thank you. Yeah. and then the second question that Janice asked is, how can I parlay my leadership roles into bringing in business?
Yeah. So, you know, this boils down to what's the ROI of my role? What's the ROI of my position? And what we need to do is help to put that together so that your board and your organization sees the ROI of your approach and your leadership capabilities. And right now, they only see it in terms of billable hours. There's only one view of this, of the effectiveness of this. And what we want to do is expand that. And so if you can create basically a case that says, hey, I can bring in billable hours, but that creates a ceiling. As a leader, I can create, you know, 10 times that through my leadership. And so the idea is to create a case where you demonstrate the ROI of your leadership efforts as opposed to straight up hourly efforts. Right? So that requires you to think about it differently and to not feel trapped in an old model that says I'm only valuable in accordance to how many hours I bill. You need to think about it differently first in order for you to come back and say, let me show you my picture.
So I'm going to just use the thought process that are probably in many people's heads, you know, as they're listening to this, that, you know, my firm will just never do that. Like we billable hours is how we make money, and they want the cake and eat it too. And it's just like not going to change. And like, so again, this probably goes out of the scope of your intern. I mean, again, but to use your argument is like, well, you got to change your thinking.
But my firm will never do that. But they will if they see an ROI that makes a lot of sense. Anybody would do that.
Right? Yeah, I respond really well to that. I think that's a great explanation. As a practical application example, I think Clio in their most recent study said that only 30% of an attorney's hours are billable, putting it at work. So that would be the metric, you know, for a law firm. Let's say that they set it that they want 40% of your hours to be billable. What would you offer as an alternative for someone to come to the leaders in their organization, in their firm, and say, you know, I understand that we want to put a metric on billable hours, but I'd like to offer the metric of leadership skills growth. Can that be numerical? Can you say, okay, I've grown in 4 ways this year. I'm growing in 1 way per quarter. What would you offer as an ROI example?
Just to build on that, Jenna asked essentially the same question. Does that mean I should show how I've helped my office attorneys increase their business?
Absolutely. That was exactly what I was going to say. So if as a leader, I can help lawyers increase their book of business with greater ease, now we're showing a very direct ROI. If I can get them more comfortable with going out there and networking or asking for referrals as a simple concept, right? I'm not being very complex. But if I can just do that and show the difference because I'm spending time coaching and leading and mentoring my lawyers in the area of growing their business, that's really direct ROI. It's not even fluffy.
Great. So I want to recap the two things we talked about, and I'm going to go into talking about coaching. So I think it's a good segue from what we were talking about, and it's a really important thing. We're a little bit more than halfway done, and I'm loving this. I hope other people are, because you have really great insights here. So again, what we talked about was the single most important factor to lead to success. If I could have an audience, I would ask people to scream it out, but I'll just say it myself. Emotional resilience.
Good job.
Thank you. It only took me 5 times of asking. But emotional resilience is actually, in my mind, again, it's not something that you just hear that and do it. That's where journaling comes in. That's where actually working with coaches comes in. That's where it's constantly working on. That's where a coach comes to play. I will definitely agree with that. Like, if you can walk away knowing, okay, if I can work on my emotional resilience, a lot of these other things will get resolved as a result. We also talked about the 3 key thinking strategies, which we were just diving into. And one is challenge your ideas, challenge your own thinking, your beliefs. 2 is challenge your resources. And 3 is focus on what you want. Now let's talk a little bit like about others that you lead. So coaching, what's the best approach to coaching others?
Okay, so I'm going to come to that question in like 30 seconds.
Perfect. But
before we answer that question, I want to just talk about emotional resilience for a second. Because like, how do you know if your emotional resilience needs work? Right? That's really a great question. And what I would encourage everyone to do is to pay attention to their mood. If you're in a good mood, and you're having a good time and you're enjoying your life and you feel passionate about what you do and you have a lot of energy and you're not tired and you know, at the end of the day you go, man, that was a great day, carry on. But if you find that you're agitated, frustrated, stressed out, temperamental, and you know, if you feel like you're on edge all the time, that's an indicator that your emotional resilience needs a bit of work. So I want to start with that.
Great.
Okay. So now let's go to your coaching question. How do you coach others? Well, the first thing is like, so imagine you have someone in your company and you're in charge of them and you want to coach them and you see that perhaps they're not performing as well as they could be, or perhaps they're performing really well, but it's time for them to go to the next level. The first thing that you need to do is that you need to pay attention to how you think about that other person. So if you see that the person isn't performing, what may be going on in your head is, hey, that person's lazy, or they're distracted, or they're scattered, or they lack organization. Whatever that story is, you need to check it at the door. Before you even go into a coaching conversation, you need to check your story at the door. And you need to replace that story with what we call assume positive intent, the assumption of positive intent. So, and
that's a really key moment. So I would love to just create an example in a law firm, because check story at the door is really important. Yeah. And it took me a while to understand that. Can you think of an example where that could play out in a law firm?
Again, you might see someone, let's say they're rude with a client, or let's say they
didn't get their hour, like they're supposed to get in a certain amount of hours this week and they didn't. And
right. Or let's say they missed a deadline, whatever it is. Right. What might happen for you is you might experience frustration. Like, I've told them a million times, they're not getting it. Something's wrong with them. They're not able to handle this job. That story needs to be set aside in order for you to coach effectively.
And the way to do that is how?
Is to acknowledge that that's your story and say, okay, so this is the stuff that's running in my mind. If I go into this conversation with that at the forefront, then I'm going to fail. And so what I need to do is say, hey, maybe there's some other stuff going on. And when I say assume positive intent, assume this: everybody wants to succeed, including this person who is not performing at their best. Everyone wants to succeed, including this person I'm about to coach.
And I just want to say, from a personal example or personal experience with working with you years ago, assuming positive intent really was a game changer for me, because if you assume positive intent that somebody has in, you actually create the positive result, because you're just, there's no negativity. You're just assuming whatever they're trying to do is trying to get to where you need to go. Because if you focus on anything else, it's just a waste of energy from my experience. All right. So you ensue positive intent. What's next?
What's next is that your job is to get the story, get their story. And so the concept of story comes up a lot as we're talking. And what that means is that people have a dialogue that runs in their head, sometimes consciously, sometimes unconsciously. And that dialogue really dictates how they behave and the results they get. So you need to access their story. So if you see someone, let's say, frustrated in a meeting and they behave poorly with a client, you want to say, what happened? You know, what was going on for you? Like, tell me your interpretation. Give me your perspective. What was going on there? And after that, so that's number two. Number three is you want to dig under that story. So you want to ask questions that they don't necessarily offer in their storytelling. So you want to ask questions like who, what, why, where, when? What were you thinking? What were you thinking was going on? Was this something that you were considering, etc.? So you want to dig under the story and get more than they are giving to you at face value. The number four is now you want to identify their beliefs. So let's say you're in a meeting and again, your lawyer, your junior lawyer is being disrespectful or tuning out or behaving in a way that feels rude to the client. And they say, yeah, the reason I was behaving like that is because I think the client is lying. So you're identifying some of the beliefs that this person has that is causing them to behave the way they do. And now you want to challenge their beliefs.
Okay. And now is this, okay. So let's just say somebody missed a deadline. Yep. They come in, you check your story, you don't judge why they've missed it. And then you get the story. What happened? You know, X, Y, and Z, I was stuck on another client call and I couldn't finish it. And then you dig under, well, why were you on that other client call? What was the purpose of that call? Why were you doing both? And then you find out, well, if I hung up on the other client, we could have lost that client and I wouldn't have done my job. And so that was their belief. And then you challenge and say, well, if the debt, you know, is that true? If you had to hang up on that client, would you really have lost them? And could you have figured out a bit better way to finish that call so you could have got the deadline done? Is that?
Well, that's part of it. But before we go to the solution mode, we really want to spend some time digging into their beliefs. So let's take your example, right? So I couldn't hang up because we would have lost the client and that would have been a terrible disaster. So there's a whole bunch of beliefs that go around that. Belief number one is, well, I couldn't ask anyone else for help. I couldn't ask anyone else to do this other project so that I could make my deadline. I couldn't say, hey, client, I have this really important deadline. Can we pick up this conversation? Can we even meet? Can we go out for drinks? Can we meet after work or whatever? There was no other solution. So there are a whole bunch of beliefs that are wrapped up in this problem. And we want to put them all on the table and then say, hey, you know what? You have more resources at your disposal than you think. You have colleagues. And the other point is, why are you waiting till the last minute to get this assignment done? What happened? So now there are a whole other set of beliefs. And what we want to do is help people achieve their goals by looking at their problems differently and helping them understand that the limitation is not time and it's not resources and it's not circumstances. The only limitation that prevents someone from reaching their goals is their thinking. Like, we got people onto the moon. That seemed like an impossibility at one point, but we did it.
Great. So I want to cover another important topic because we have 15 minutes left. And before I do, Ryan had asked a question, which is, and because it's the single most important factor, I want to dive into that quickly, is he said, how can you improve your emotional resilience? What are the top three things you can do? He's like me. I like lists. So how do you?
Okay. So I want to say this for the 30th time, maybe. It's not what you do, it's what you think. So if you want to do something, you have to ask yourself a question. Let's say you notice that you're frustrated all the time. Let's say you notice you're impatient all the time. What you want to do is literally take a piece of paper and a pen and start asking yourself some questions. What is causing the frustration? Why am I so annoyed all the time? Why do people bug me? Right? And what you'll notice is you'll write an onslaught. Well, people should be smarter and people should work faster and nobody cares as much as I do. And I can't rely on anybody. And everybody's out for themselves. Whatever that list is, those are your beliefs.
But here's where the confusion is, because you have to build habits, right? You just by telling me emotional resilience is the most important thing does not make it so. So thinking some, so even thinking an hour a day is doing. So that's, I think, where the confusion is for people like me and Ryan, is like, you need to build the mental muscle. And so that is doing. So what do you, so is there exercises or what thinking techniques can you, like, how do you, if you were to create a seminar in 21 days or less, you will improve your emotional resilience or whatever that is.
10 weeks, not 21 days. Okay.
So is your answer working with a coach? I mean, is that the,
That is my answer, of course. But if you didn't want to work with a coach, the first thing I would say to you is, you know, start journaling and start to pay attention to two things. Number one is how you feel, right? Your emotional state. Number two is ask yourself what's causing you to feel that way. And very often we'll say, well, I feel frustrated because Joe was being unpleasant with me, or Joe was being rude, or because there's this really hard case and I can't seem to crack it. And we always point to external factors to explain why we feel the way we do. And really, there's only one reason why we feel the way we do, and it's because of the way we think. Hey, so guys, write this down. The way I feel is a function of my thinking. It's not because of anybody or anything else or any outside factor. And so if I can start to identify the thinking that's causing my emotional state, now I can build my emotional resilience, because I can choose differently. I can choose to see the situation differently. And when I choose to see the situation differently, I'm able to reach my goals with greater ease.
Great. So we have about 10 minutes left. So what I want to do right now is I want to give one more thing of value at the end, which is your number one technique to handle stress. And I made up number one, but whatever that is, how you handle stress. I know we were going to talk about that. But before we do that, I just want to take a moment. I also want to give the opportunity for anybody who wants to talk to you afterwards or get more information, if that's okay with you. I don't know, even maybe work with you. What should they do? They reach you?
Okay. So let's talk about stress. So stress is
That's at the end.
Yeah. Okay. We're not there yet.
I want to end on value instead of just kind of like doing the bio stuff. So I just want to talk about that quickly, and then we'll do stress at the end.
Oh, so you want to get the bio stuff over.
Oh, yeah. If somebody wants to contact you and get some more information.
How to contact me. Best way to find me is on our website. It's frameofmindcoaching.com. And you'll see all kinds of information there. But the thing I encourage everybody to do is on that website is an assessment link. And that allows you to take a snapshot of your thinking currently. Like, what's going on for me right now? What's bothering me? What's agitating me? And it allows you to see what direction you're heading in. If you don't know what direction you're heading in, it's very hard to get you to the destination you want to go. And that assessment that you fill in will enable you to have a call with one of our coaches who will just go through the assessment with you and give you some preliminary coaching. If you're interested in doing more, the invitation is there, but that call is absolutely free of charge, complimentary. And what we find is people make change immediately after that call.
Great. Thank you. I would 100%, I mean, again, we're very, for me, I would 100% take you up on the free call. And just in my experiences after doing that call with Kim, I was not planning on working with her originally and I wasn't thinking about it. And there was so much value that I got. I think we started right away afterwards. And again, this is not about selling your services or what you do. I just want to have impact on people's, on attorneys, and help them grow as leaders. So if it's not working with you, I think journaling is the good first step to get that going. Because I do think, and I know you say it's thinking versus actions. I am a very action-oriented person. Because what I personally don't like is people who constantly complain about the same things and don't do anything about it. Leadership is one of those areas. Everybody is always looking to you. You're giving some, you know, they're looking to you in one form or another. And you have an opportunity right now, I think, to help yourself in your thinking. So that's my hard push in terms of getting focused on, if you don't journal, start looking to do that. To get your thinking right. So that is actually a good segue for me, because journaling, for me at least, and I hope this is not your answer, that for me, it helped me reduce my stress significantly, because when I was stressed about things, I didn't actually know what I was stressed about. And I remember, Kim, having a conversation with you, and we were at a coaching session, and I was super stressed. And you said to me, Dave, what value is being stressed doing for you right now? And I said, nothing. She's like, well, then stop. And it doesn't, if you realize that, if you can let go. And it was almost when you did that, there was a button that I felt like I hit, and I let go of the stress, and like, it just sort of the anxiety disappeared. So I'm not probably doing a good enough job to say how you did give me a magic button that let stress disappear when I wanted to. And so in 3 minutes, that's what you got is, what is the magic button somebody can walk away with for that? And then I'm going to wrap it up at the end.
Okay. So what I want to say about stress is that nothing in and of itself is inherently stressful. It's how we think about everything that causes the stress. So that's number one. So let's identify how we're thinking about the thing that's causing us stress. The second thing I want to say about stress is this, is that stress is a thing. Is it good or is it bad? Neither. But the way we think about stress will either make it worse or make it completely manageable. So if we walk around going, oh my God, I'm really, really stressed. It's really bad. I can barely manage it. Then what happens is it becomes an infinitely worse experience. The burden becomes heavier. The load is harder to carry. So the way we think about stress will determine how we handle it. And so the message here is stress is a thing, and there's an optimal level of stress. And if we can start to think about stress with greater ease, that's your first step in managing it more effectively. And it's counterintuitive in a way, but regardless of the things that create stress for us, the way we think about stress itself will determine our ability to manage it more effectively.
Thank you very much. And if you could remind everybody, what is the actionable assignment you had to journal about?
Okay, so you know what? I'll make it simpler for you. I'm going to give you an assignment, and whoever does it, if you want to send it to me, you know what? We'll assign a coach to review it with you. How's that? So here's your assignment. Number one, what do I really, really want? Whatever that is, it could be something physical or something completely intangible, whatever it is. What do I really, really want more than anything? And it's not something that someone wants for you or something that's expected of you. What do you really, really, truly, deeply want? Number two, why do I want it? And number three, what's stopping me from having it now? Do that assignment and send it to me. My email address is kim@frameofmindcoaching.com. And what you will see is we will address some of the beliefs that are really standing in your way and move them out of the way. And you'll feel very differently right off the bat.
I really, really love those three questions because there's no hiding with those questions.
Right. And they're tangible because lawyers like tangibility.
I like tangible. Yes. Yeah. All right. So I want to wrap up right now and maybe we'll even end a minute early. So we started off the single most important thing that leads to leadership success. Everybody at once. That's right. Emotional resilience. Congratulations. I heard the screams from everybody else. To build on that, the question constantly is, what can you do to do that? And you say, well, it's not about doing, it's about thinking. And then number two is you went over three key thinking strategies. Number three is you went over how to coach others. And there's four things to kind of dive into. And then four, you gave a quote that we should write down. The way I feel is a function of my thinking. Number five, we talked very briefly, even though it's an important subject, about stress. And then number six, you just ended with this journal assignment. The three questions: what do I want? Why do I want it? And what is stopping me from getting it? And you offered, if anybody emails you at kim@frameofmindcoaching, you will dive deep into them with a coach, or you'll sign a coach, and they'll figure that out. So I think I feel good on my end that we lived up to our bargain of delivering value in this call. We will be sending a survey afterwards to see if you guys agree. This is also being recorded, so this is something you can watch or listen to afterwards. Not only will we record it for you, we will actually print out a transcript that's going to be done through AI, so you can read it and print it and use it for other things, because sometimes it's easier to do that. And then lastly, my job here is done, but I just wanted to say that I really appreciate those who participated. And I'm sure if you have other questions, you can do so as well. My personal mission is to help people break through their walls. That's what Lawline is about in general, like stress reduction. Like CLE is a stressful thing because time is of essence. So our core purpose as a company is personal freedom. And it's either by helping save you time to complete a CLE when you need it in a very quick manner, whether it's on your phone or because we have an app or on the computer, and also personal freedom to get the content that you need to help you grow in your career. And the main thing, you know, we work with individuals. We have about 100,000 attorneys who use us, but we also do group subscriptions. So if you're a firm, if you're a mid-sized firm, we work with you and create content that helps the firm create personal freedom for all the attorneys, both in tracking it and providing them with, we do unique things like this as well, just for firms where it's not only CLE content, but we can put you in touch with people like him. So that's my two cents. I just want to get the message out there. Thank you all so much for attending. We got to thank, so I appreciate that. We appreciate everybody here. We appreciate everybody who's used us and who's thinking about Lawline. We really do care about making sure you have personal freedom in what you do. That's all. I think we're 1 minute early, so I'm going to leave on that note. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Kathleen. And we will see you, I think, the next seminar. Kathleen, if you can just share quickly with the date of it and what it's on, and then we'll end on that, if you have that available.
Definitely. Thank you, David. Our next webinar is going to be on March 20th, which is a Tuesday. It's going to be from 1:30 to 2:30 EST. That's Eastern Standard Time. And it's going to be given by Polly Rojas, and it's going to be addressing the topic of improving vivid speaking skills when you're at networking events, which can often be hard for lawyers to address. Sometimes you don't know how to communicate with others effectively and promote your business at the same time. And Polly's going to walk us through strategies and tactics you can take for improving your networking skills.
And by the way, a theme here is Polly is also a coach that I actually work with now. She has worked with me in creating keynote seminars and helped my public speaking. And she is just unbelievable. Just as much as Kim is unbelievable, she's unbelievable too. So Kim, I hope you have time to watch that as well. Thank you. And thank you, Kathleen. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.